Hello. Welcome to Pressure Drop, the program about the business of weather.
Good morning. My name's Ian Harper, and I'm speaking to you from the 4th International Conference on Energy Meteorology here in Bari, Italy. This morning, we're going to be speaking about the business opportunity for small and medium-sized businesses in the energy meteorology sector. And I'm going to be interviewing Giles Dixon and Steve Dawling. Gentlemen, let me hand you over and tell me who you are. Giles.
Hello, I'm Giles Dixon. I'm the CEO of Wind Europe. Wind Europe is the industry association that represents wind energy in Europe. We are the voice of the entire value chain of wind energy, the turbine manufacturers, the utilities, project developers, the supply chain, including all the small companies that make up the supply chain. We're the voice of wind energy in Europe.
So quite a key player then. Steve?
Hello, I'm Steve Dawling. I'm Professor of Meteorology at the University of East Anglia. Also Innovations Director at WeatherQuest Limited. WeatherQuest is an SME providing services to energy, food and water sector, and in particular renewable energy companies operating in and around the United Kingdom.
Right, gentlemen, let me kick this off then. What are the opportunities for startup businesses, small, medium-sized enterprise in the energy meteorology space? Giles, if you could take that question first.
Okay, look, wind energy, when it started, was a very simple business chain. You had utilities that invested in wind farms, they generated electricity, they sold that electricity into the electricity grid. Now it has become much more complex. Critically, there's been huge development around the question of how do we monitor how much wind energy is being generated, how do we monitor the performance of wind turbines, and how do we improve the information that we feed in to those people who are operating the electricity system. We're very conscious of the fact that we are generating variable electricity. A lot of the time the wind is not blowing. So the information we can provide about how much energy we are going to be feeding in to the system is crucial to everybody with a stake in energy. Now, there are a lot of small companies that have come into this space, small companies who are developing sensors, IT software and hardware that gets installed on wind turbines and monitors the operational performance of each individual turbine and the components within that turbine, sends information back to the wind farm operators. These sensors also monitor the atmospheric conditions around the wind turbine. Air density, of course, is a key determinant of how much electricity is going to be generated from wind farms. That information goes to central operating center. It's all put together, and the wind farm operators then share information with the grid system operators about the likely output of wind energy a day ahead, 2 days ahead, up to 1 week ahead. But their ability to share that information comes from, in many cases, small businesses who have developed the technology that we're now able to install on wind turbines to give us this data.
So quite a few opportunities for small businesses then. Steve, what do you think about this? What opportunities do you see for the small enterprise here, the startup business?
Yeah, I think small businesses can add value in so many of these areas that Giles has highlighted. It's about adding value, it's about offering something that's going to make the industry more productive whilst being safe in operation. So I think what's exciting here is that not only are there companies that have scientific expertise that can contribute, either in modelling or in monitoring, but also the big data analytics, big data opportunities.
Big data.
So we're talking here not just about scientific contributions that can be made by small businesses, but computational science, machine learning, all sorts of things that people can get stuck into and identify and explain how they can add value into this system.
And there's a lot of data in weather forecasting, I take it.
There's a huge amount in weather forecasting. Some of it comes from observational platforms, satellites, for example, in terms of remote sensing, but also turbine-based or in-situ measurement of one form or another. But also in modelling, you know, models that are running worldwide are also producing vast outputs. And companies operating in renewable energy need assistance in making the best use of all of that information. We need to unlock the potential of the big data.
Are all the opportunities only in the renewable sector? What about gas? What about nuclear? What about fusion? New forms of energy as well as traditional ones?
It's definitely the case that the traditional technologies are also very sensitive to weather and climate variability and in the performance of their plants. And it's not only in the current weather situation that companies are interested. They're also interested looking ahead, because the investments in the technology are lasting in some cases decades, in some cases even centuries in the case of nuclear technology. So we need to be aware that it's not only present day conditions that we need to optimise, it's how things are going to perform in the future.
How important is public-private sector cooperation in small and medium-sized enterprises getting engaged with this sector? Are governments funding projects and programmes?
They are. They could be doing more of it. The European Union, through Horizon 2020, through the Connecting Europe facility, is investing large amounts of money in solutions to integrating variable renewables in the electricity system. We've talked up until now mainly about electricity generation. Could we just say a brief word about energy transmission and distribution?
And what about efficiency as well, perhaps?
Well, indeed, this is where efficiency comes in as well. There are lots of inefficiencies in the electricity networks at the moment. For example, we are not exploiting sufficiently the fact that when it's colder, you can actually get more electrons into your transmission lines. A lot of the transmission system operators are not monitoring how far they could actually expand the capacity of their networks at colder temperatures. And there are some small companies coming to the market now with equipment, IT equipment, that can measure ambient air temperature around transmission lines and inform the transmission system operators what that means in terms of increased capacity of those lines. Okay, this is called dynamic line rating. That is the technology, and we need to be investing much more in it.
And there's a strong real-time element to that.
There is, yeah.
Of both collating that data through telemetry, but then making it available in usable formats to the user.
Yeah.
What are the barriers to small and medium-sized businesses getting into this sector? I mean, we've all heard these stories of the utilities gobbling up good ideas and putting them in the cupboard because they'll interfere with their own business model. Is this just gossip? Is it true? Are there any other barriers to entry, or is it all pretty smooth, plain sailing for the small startup business, small and medium-sized enterprise in this sector?
And my own experience with this is that, as ever, building trust with your clients is really important here. So actually, if you have great ideas and the willingness to engage with users, to tell them about what your offer is and how you can help them, then working together collaboratively doesn't actually present too many barriers. And there's so many opportunities, as Giles described earlier, that I think most small companies that have something exciting to offer here can find receptive audiences to what they've got.
I would quote two areas where there may be barriers to what SMEs want to do in this space. One is on storage. We don't yet have a clearly defined business model for electricity storage. It is not clear in regulation who can own electricity storage, who can buy it, who can sell it, who can buy and sell it to whom. Okay, and that needs to be clarified, because that's holding back a lot of smaller players who would like to get into the storage space. And I'm thinking here of people operating virtual power plants, yeah, putting themselves forward as system aggregators. Yeah. Same is true on the demand response side. A lot of people who want to get into demand response, offering services to electricity consumers, saying to them, okay, we will take responsibility for when certain electrical appliances in your house are turned on and off to make sure you are consuming electricity only when prices are lowest, okay, and you're reducing your electricity bill. Don't worry, we'll make sure your fridge isn't turned off for more than a few hours. Yeah, your food won't go rotten, But these people are coming to the market. Yeah. Now, in order to play in the market, there needs to be a clearly defined set of rules about what those aggregators can and cannot do, the services they can offer to consumers, and where they're sourcing, of course, the electricity, yeah, from the market providers.
I think there's a potential barrier, or an obvious barrier actually, for startups, Ian, and that's that until you can demonstrate the value of your idea applied to industry data, it's very hard to get the attention of your audience. So getting that first break of working with an energy sector organisation, marrying the data that you've got as a small company with the data that they've got in their organisation, it's always going to be hard to grab their attention. So a first break, a first relationship, a first conversation at a conference is often the first way that a small company can potentially get a break.
Now that seamlessly brings me to my next question. You're you're a big wind energy association. Have you got a program which brings together the industry and would-be startups, good ideas, innovators in the universities?
Yes, we have startups who join our association and use our association to network in the industry and to promote the innovative products and services that they're offering. Let me give you an example of one company. It's a company called Sentient Science. Yeah, it actually started in North America, but they came to Europe about 2 years ago, and their product offering is IT hardware and software that gets installed onto wind turbines to collect data. They also have the software that manages that big data and distills it into meaningful information for the wind farm operators. Okay, a particular focus of what they're doing is using accurate performance data to inform decisions about whether you extend the lifetime of a wind farm when it gets to the end of its normal 20-year operational life. Now, wind's been around long enough for us now to be at that period.
We're in the retrofit era, aren't we?
Retrofit, upgrading, repowering, simple lifetime extension. Yeah. But in order to take those decisions, you need accurate data about the performance of your equipment. This company is providing just that information and is now informing decisions that our bigger members, the utilities, the bigger project developers are taking about lifetime extensions. But again, we need government regulation to be sending the right signals. We need governments to be making it clear to the wind farm operators, yes, it's okay to extend the lifetime of your wind farm, you'll get a permit.
Aren't governments doing that? Aren't they clear about
generally
regulation?
Generally they are. It's not as clear as it could and should be.
Where's the muddiness?
Look, there are some countries in Europe where the permit is awarded when a wind farm is first installed and it's awarded for 20 years full stop.
Can you name names?
I'd rather not get into that because it's a muddy picture and it would be unfair to single any one country out, yeah? It's not crystal clear, the regulation in any one country, right? Generally, you can get a permit, but how easy it will be to get that permit for the lifetime extension differs from country to country.
Steve, what about you? What's your experience of, small, medium-sized enterprises and the bigger industry coming together? Do they come together smoothly? Are there plenty of opportunities? You seem to be in the thick of this conference for sure. Are you participating in this sort of process of bringing the two sides together?
Yeah, I think there's two levels of operation that I'd like to highlight here. There's the role of the SME in having something new to offer and working one-to-one in a bespoke way with an energy sector company. But then there's the spreading of good practice at the other end of the scale, which I think is exactly what this conference is about, where we're looking to share new knowledge and understanding across the sector for the benefit of the sector as a whole. So I think activity needs to be going on at many different levels in order for us to be successful here. I wanted to pick up on something Giles was talking about there. We were just talking about retrofit, upgrade, life extension. This conference is about the influence of weather and climate on the energy sector. So to optimise that process, that programme of retrofit and upgrade, we need better weather and climate services to make that as efficient as possible. And that's what we're discussing this week at ICEM.
So there are opportunities in the weather and climate services market?
Absolutely, and it's really exciting to be here to be at the previous conferences in this series where we see and hear about where those latest opportunities are.
Now, when it comes to startup businesses and SMEs, we're always hearing about funding problems. There's not enough money, the banks won't lend, they want too many guarantees when they do lend. Yeah. Seems to be full of problems, and this is what I find in my writing. When it comes to funding, what's your own experience of funding? One would expect that the governments of Europe, of other countries, would support decarbonisation. Do they give it any preference when it comes to funding?
Well, one thing I'd like to highlight is that in recent years, in UK but also in other European countries, there's a big emphasis now on demonstrating research impact at universities. And so my experience, wearing two hats here, is that if we have new knowledge that can be applied in a useful way for the benefit of end users, then there is more and more support, more and more encouragement and funding to support that translation. And so I find it very effective to be running an SME in a higher education institution, because that link is strongly being encouraged.
So you're running an SME yourself?
Yes.
Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. So WeatherQuest Limited was formed in 2001. We began with a strong focus actually on the food sector. But since then, we have transitioned into water and energy. And in the last 5 years, we've been providing services to Siemens, the world's largest turbine manufacturer, and also to a company called James Fisher Marine Services, who are a company operating in the middle space, providing integrated systems to the wind energy sector. That means that our weather and climate knowledge is being embedded within systems that support a bigger frame of decision making that is required in the wind energy sector. So, for example, it's not only necessary to know what the weather forecast looks like for the next hours and days, it's also important to know what staff have you got available, what vessels have you got available, have the staff got the right training for the job that's required tomorrow, what sort of machinery, tools and so forth are required to get the job done. It's all about, I think, integrating the weather and climate information with the rest of the required data that somebody needs to make a decision. Nobody wants to go to different places to get the elements of the recipe. They want to go to a one-stop shop, I think, to help them make a better decision.
Thanks for that. Giles, I mean, as a senior man at a large wind energy association, are you forming a bridge with the funders, with government, with industry? Are you making it possible for small, medium-sized businesses and startups to get that vital first capital they need?
Yeah. I don't disagree with anything Steve has said. I would actually put a bit more emphasis on the importance of private equity and venture capital funds in supporting startups. Yes, governments can provide seed money, and that can be extremely useful in leveraging private finance. Actually, governments have an even more important role to play in getting the regulatory frameworks right, because the private investors will come to the party when they see that the regulatory framework is stable and it's providing the right clarity about business models, which will facilitate the development of startups. Okay, I think that is key. Now, in our association, we have not only the turbine manufacturers, their supply chain, the wind farm developers and the operators, the big utilities, we have some banks and financial institutions as well. We have pension funds, we have insurance companies, we have boutique investors in wind energy. So we have people who are directly offering this sort of
support. So there's already a good support investment network there.
Yeah, indeed, there is.
And added to that, Ian, I would also highlight the ERDF, the European Regional Development Fund, which is offering funding at the regional level where the energy sector is crucial to the local economy. So in my region, in East Anglia in the UK, the energy sector is one of the primary employers, and it's natural, therefore, that ERDF funding would be available for renewable energy related initiatives there. So we have a modest SCORE programme there that we can bid into to support the activities we want to develop within our company. And then also in a UK context, we've been impressed with the Funding Circle offer, which is a scheme that you can bid into, government funded, which can provide the resources you need for development of good ideas.
Moving on now, because we're running out of time, one thing that people say SMEs and business startups are good at is innovation. Where are the innovations going to come from in the energy meteorology sector? What are the innovations we need? Get your looking glasses, get your crystal balls out. Steve?
Well, one that I'm talking about this week at the conference actually is the link between weather and marine conditions. So Giles, in his talk at the conference this morning, was stressing how important offshore development in wind energy is at the moment. And that's absolutely true for the UK, of course, where we're really leading the way in that area. Nevertheless, we still need to drive down costs to help wind energy be as competitive as it can be with the other technologies. So what we're doing is actually saying it's not just a weather forecast that we need, it's an access forecast to the turbine. What that means is that not only does a company need to know what wind conditions look like from a safety and productivity point of view, they also need to know what the wave conditions are in terms of the ability to transition from a vessel to a turbine to get work done, whether it's in the construction phase or in the operations and maintenance phase. So what we're presenting this week at the conference is a new integrated system which actually couples weather, waves and tides in the marine environment in order to try and do the best possible job of predicting wave height in some cases extreme environments. Those forecasts up to now of wave conditions haven't been accurate enough. We need to do better, and that's where our particular innovation is being put.
Can I elaborate on that?
Certainly.
Europe has 13 gigawatts of offshore wind today, and it's taken us 15 or more years to get to 13 gigawatts. Just in the next 4 years alone, we will install another 12 gigawatts.
As much in the next few years as we've done already.
Yes, exactly.
Staggering.
Then in the 2020s, we are hoping we will install another 60 gigawatts on top of that. Now, let's just put this in context. This is a huge logistical installation undertaking, and there are very real practical issues that need to be overcome to make this doable. Yeah, do we have enough boats? Do we have enough cranes? Yeah, what is the supply chain around the boats and cranes? What is their respective availability? And availability is all about weather conditions. So many times wind farm developers developing offshore wind farms have been unable to take the equipment out when they wanted to because of the weather conditions. And being able to predict more accurately what is going to be going on in the marine environment is crucial to allow the wind farm developers to plan their installation and their operation and maintenance activity, getting the workers out to the wind farms. They can't always be accessed, as you say, Steve. And, you know, this doesn't sound like 21st century stuff. It's not high tech, but boy, it's important, because this is can do or cannot do. And it all comes from the meteorological information that we have.
One final question, I promise you. A lot is said about renewable energy, its intermittent nature, or increasingly intermittent nature, as we move to new forms of renewable, wind and solar in particular, as they dominate the input of power. But a lot of people say, unless we get a truly smart grid, the internet of electricity, some people I've heard call it, unless we can actually take on board this intermittent power in a controlled, computerized fashion, we're really not going to do as much as we could possibly do. Has anybody got anything to say about this?
Well, Giles was speaking this morning at the conference about coupling of power with heating systems and also with transport. Please.
Yeah, that is crucial. I'd step back a little and first say wind energy is becoming less variable, less intermittent, to use your word, Ian. How? We're now developing turbines that operate at lower wind speeds. So the idea that there's not enough wind, you won't get any wind energy today, that's becoming less and less of an issue, okay? Secondly, we're developing turbines that have very rapid ramp up and ramp down time. So when the transmission system operators tell us, that's it, that's enough, we can ramp down accordingly. When they want more, we can ramp up accordingly. Thirdly, Wind turbines today not only offer core electricity, they offer the balancing services, that is to say frequency control and voltage control. And often the grid system operators will come to the wind farm operators and say, actually, we now need you to help us balance the frequency in the whole of the electricity system. And we can do that, both onshore wind and offshore wind. Offshore wind did it for the first time in the world just 12 days ago. It was actually in Liverpool Bay, the Burbank Bank wind farm. They offered full frequency control services in response to a request from National Grid, and that was a major breakthrough. So we are helping to balance the electricity system. We're managing our own inherent variability. Okay, having smart grids will also help, not least in that it will enable us to match our always slightly variable supply with more variable demand through demand response managed through a smarter grid, okay? Other things we need are more efficiently functioning electricity markets. Mm. Crucially, we need more intraday trading of electricity. So those of us who are generating electricity from variable sources can sell it as close as possible to the moment of production. And we want electricity markets where we can sell anywhere in Europe, that we're balancing the electricity market across wide geographical areas, because the wind is always blowing somewhere in Europe, and today we're not fully tapping that.
And I think the move offshore as well is helpful here too, because the wind resource offshore, as a general remark, is larger than it is onshore.
Yeah.
So the move of the sector offshore is ensuring that the wind is blowing more often than it does if you are onshore based only.
Well, we'll conclude our interview there. Giles Dixon, Steve Dawling, thank you very much.
Thank you.